love me like nobody's loved me. Come rain or come shine, happy together, unhappy together.
Judy Garland is one of the most beloved and tragic figures in American pop culture. End of the Rainbow, a drama with music currently playing at the Belasco Theater, explores the singer's final days. But while you're watching Tracy Bennett's amazing performance, you might wonder whether the two-time Olivier Award winner and Tony nominee has brought Garland back from the dead. New York Times critic Ben Brantley called her portrayal of Garland one of the most complete portraits of an artist he's ever seen. And I'm very pleased to welcome Tracy Bennett to our program today.
Hi, how are you?
You've won two Oliviers, but this is your Broadway debut?
Yeah.
What's kept you away?
I don't know. Maybe mentally I wasn't ready for it before now. And I still have to think I'm doing it in a pub in England to deal with the stress of it all and the brilliance of it all. I'm having a great time. And
well, is it all that different from working in the West End?
I think you have to be mentally strong. It's not just about the work. It's about being a product as well, which, you know, if you're the lead, there's a different psyche to it. You have to lead a company, literally.
Well, had you been a fan?
Judy? I respected her. I was a fan of Gene Kelly, really.
Mm-hmm. But you bear more of a physical resemblance to Judy Garland.
I don't know, maybe not.
They were wonderful together in The Pirate.
Oh, I love them. Well, it wasn't a great film, but I found Judy, if you like, when I was little through watching Gene Kelly films. And then I was like, who's that? That's fabulous. She's brilliant. And but I wasn't fanatical, no.
Well, she remains one of the most imitated performers in the world. How do you approach creating a Judy Garland without veering into camp or parody?
Some people would say that I do that.
No.
With me, I looked at the human being in a situation of addiction and control from the mother and a studio, being in this case MGM. So I looked at the human being with all that that would mean with the era, the men in her life, being a woman in that era, the body language, I saved the legend, iconic singing stuff to last, really.
Well, one critic said you seem possessed by the spirit and voice of Garland.
Is that good or bad? Sounds like I'm a demon.
Well, the vibrato, is that something that's natural to your singing, or is it?
It kind of is, because I'm one of the old kind of belters, really. I can't do Andrew Lloyd Webber stuff or that kind of pop stuff. They used to say when I was training, you're very New York, old school Broadway schlepper show girl, like Guys and Dolls, like Miss Adelaide, or all those great American musicals.
Well, you can do those in Britain, can't you?
Yeah. And I've done all that. But so I've just put an effect on with, like, she had a bit of a lisp, and I've put more of the vib on later. Don't forget, this isn't a time of Dorothy when it's pure and cutting through like a diamond and trilling. Her voice, well, all our voice is lower eventually, by definition of age, but...
And also the wear and tear she did to her own body.
Yeah, of course. Well, like all of us, me included. So I've just studied her timbre, and it's a little brighter than mine with the diphthongs and stuff, but I just put more of an effect on, and I've kind of tried to look at her breathing and her phrasing and incorporate that with mine. And but not too much, if you like, because then you do go into parody. Or I didn't want to be an impersonation and an impression. I just wanted to be a human being
On the other hand, situation. According to the New York Post, one audience member accused you of lip-syncing her tracks.
I know. I was furious because I thought, I wish, put my CD on and then everybody's happy and then I can save my voice. But yeah, two people have said, and they will not believe the producers when, I mean, the producers even offered free tickets to come back. And then they wrote back saying, don't you pull the wool over my eyes. She's definitely lip-syncing. So that's amazing to me.
Well, actually, when Milli Vanilli do the part, they will be doing
Oops.
Judy really was an intense performer. But you have to do that as well. You must come out of every performance drained.
No, I don't actually. I think energy breeds energy. When I'm out of work, I'm just a slob and I sit there watching trash TV, eating chips, you know. And that, you get lethargic. And I don't get guilty about that anymore because you work so hard. But, you know, it does get draining only in terms of if you don't eat right, if you don't sleep much, you know, if you're just not looking after yourself. You have to be a bit of an athlete. But, you know, I try and balance. I'm not a saint. I do go out and I do drink and I do have late nights. Otherwise, you go mad.
But not as bad as Judy, or
no,
at least
no,
the Judy
no,
we have.
No, no.
It begins this show.
I'm not as gifted as that.
Show opens with her in 1968 about to launch another comeback, this time during a 5-week engagement in London. The show was called Talk of the Town?
The place where she performed, yes.
So that was kind of like when American comedians wanted to do the Palladium, American singers would want to do Talk of the Town.
Well, Tony Bennett did a series there as well. I think a lot of people did. Certainly our stars did and your stars did. But it wasn't the Palladium. It was a different kind of vibe. It was like a dinner, cabaret, nightclub, smaller, more intimate, you know.
Is she returning to the stage because she wants to or because she has to?
Because she has to.
She's
she was
been,
in debt and, yeah. You know, they kept saying in the course of my research that... There was another comeback, and she says, you know, I didn't think I ever went away. But of course, I guess that was the spin doctors at the time. But she was seriously in debt, and she had to get some money somehow.
And it's surprising that she wasn't debt. She'd had many hit movies, hit TV shows. She'd performed in sellout concerts. She had a lot of hit records. Why would she broke at this point in her career?
Well, again, according to my research, the men would look after her money and she would let them.
So she chose men unwisely.
I guess.
Well, Vincent Minnelli put her in a great movie.
Yeah, they say he was the best husband she had. These are not my words. This is what I've read. And he looked after her, but he couldn't. They couldn't deal with her. You know, she was addicted. She had the gene, God love her. And, you know, I wasn't there, but everybody says it just got a grip of her, and yet it's confusing because a lot of people say she knew what she was doing, so the games would be played, the testing, the insecurity would come out, the men would kind of go, oh, I can't deal with it, therefore I'll take her money. You know, I mean, who knows what it was.
Well, in the play we also meet Mickey Deans, her fiancé and manager, played by Tom Pelfrey, and he's slated to become husband number 5. She calls him her protector. Is she really that defenseless?
It seemed so. I think probably, well, I'm hoping, that she was a woman who was feisty, ahead of her time, but in that society couldn't be maybe who she wanted to be. So this vulnerability, you know... People say, yes, she was vulnerable and needed protection and she wanted protection, but maybe she was too cosseted in that world of MGM that she wasn't used to that. Everything was done for her. So this in-denial thing, she lived a lifestyle without having the money for it when she'd left the studio. It must be very difficult when you're a child star and the icon of Dorothy and Wizard of Oz to then be sacked from a studio and suddenly not have anything. You're in a world of cotton wool where everything is done. Your clothes are ironed, your meals are cooked. And it's said that she, you know, years later when she was living in a mansion in Hollywood, that in California, she had 13 staff and didn't pay them for 2 years, but they were loyal to her. But one by one, it was like, Judy, we have to get paid. So they all left. Well, you're living an in denial lifestyle. You've got to par down. But how can a movie star at that level par down? They're not used to it. And by the way, Mickey Dean's nephew came to the show and said that Tom Pelfrey was absolutely perfect and did exactly what his uncle was doing in terms of he was her drug dealer originally, but he couldn't deal with the fact that she was so far gone and needy and erratic and all over the place with the drugs that even he had a hard time, you know.
Well, he's in a rough situation. Perhaps we can even sympathize with him a little bit.
Yeah.
As her fiance, Mickey wants her to be sober, but as her manager, he needs to make sure that the show will go on, and that means getting her drugs.
Absolutely. And that's a terrible situation because he realizes she just can't be clean anymore. She can't. She didn't know who she was without them, if you see what I mean. Her persona was based on those drugs because her mother gave them to her and the studio gave them to her, and there she was hooked. So very early on, who was she? She was Frances Gumm in a real name. So it's Judy Garland. Even that must do something weird. And then the iconness on top of that at 16, 17, 18, to know that you're worldwide famous, what does that do to a person?
The same sort of thing happened to Mickey Rooney, who co-starred with her in so many of the early films. He also wound up being taken advantage of and is broke, according to the New York Times. I guess this is a story that we should not be surprised to hear about. But in her case, you also needed uppers to get up in the morning and downers to go to sleep.
Apparently they were all on them, or everybody at the studio, but some of them didn't. They didn't become addicted. See what I mean? So you've either got the addictive gene or not.
Now, is Tom Pelfrey also British?
No, he's American.
And you also have Michael Cumstey, who's American.
Yes, he was born in Britain and then went to South Africa and then here. So
I think of him as an American actor because his career has been here for so long.
Yeah, of course.
And he's playing Anthony, a gay pianist who will be accompanying her on stage.
That's right.
And how do they feel about working with each other again?
Who?
The Anthony and Garland.
Oh, I see. I thought you meant Michael and Tom. I'm like,
yeah, I wasn't clear there.
It's all right. Well, Anthony,
because they had a bad performance in Melbourne that had didn't go too well.
First of all, I must stress that it is an amalgam of MDs and the gay element has come in. So there's no Anthony per se in real life. That's just to show the juxtaposition between what life she could have had, safe, secure, loving, and the bad men or the interesting men who weren't so good for her. You know what I mean? So, yes, it's tricky in the play when they meet again, and he just wants her to be safe, and he wants to love her and save her as a human being. Whereas the Mickey character wants to save the performer. You see what I mean? So there's the triangle.
Why do you think Garland was and remains adored by so many people in the gay community to this day? The show alludes to the fact that many of her fans, especially her gay ones, loved the sadness about her.
Well, it's my gay friends have all said to me, American and English, it's the struggle. They recognise the struggle and through adversity still coming back and still giving pleasure to an audience and the little vulnerability thing of it, unthreatening, you know. And she was gay-friendly at a time when it was, illegal, you know, and underground, if you like. She was funny and witty and a raconteur. And a diva, you know, with frocks. That's what my friends say. That's why they loved her.
At one point, she yells, "It's terrible to know what you're capable of and never get there."
Love that line. Mm-hmm. And everybody in the theatre or anybody in from all walks of our profession have always picked that line out afterwards in the dressing room with me. They go, I love that line. And I go, I know I do, because it's so true.
Well, it's true for a lot of people, but
yeah, of course.
We feel her tragedy because we watch so much of it play out in public.
Right, with thousands of people watching. You know, I was a tax officer in the past. You don't get 2,000 people watching you over your shoulder every day. I know your boss does, but, to be looked at like that and criticised all the time, you've got to have a bit of a backbone, really.
A number of her most famous songs are included in the show, and it's striking how much they seem to sync up with her actual life. Do you think that's what gave her performances so much power? For example, many have written about her sitting on the edge of the stage night after night and singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow and tears coming, raining down. You would have thought after a while it wouldn't have had such a powerful effect on her.
True, and who knows what was in her head. I would say one must look at one's life and go, oh my God, you know, what could have been?
Well, we get
your soul must tell you something, mustn't it, on a wet Wednesday afternoon, with or without drugs. Your soul must kick in somewhere and say, but that was her life. She didn't know anything else.
We get to see her doing perfect performances on stage, but also some of the more difficult performances. So you got to screw up at times.
As Judy.
Uh huh. Oh, well, obviously,
well,
as Judy.
Course.
I mean,
of course,
it's almost like singing off key when you have perfect pitch.
Right. Yeah. You. I've learned that one years ago. If you're good at something, to be brave enough to play bad, it's quite a test, you know, because you want to give the best you can as a performer. But you have to understand that, you know, if she cracked, you have to crack. And quite a few people go, oh, she didn't sound like that. And you go, yes, she did. I've got the tapes from the talk of the town on my computer. And every now and again, I have to look at it. And so that's why, yes, I don't want damage of my voice, but at the end of the week, if I'm tired and it's croaky, it's kind of better. It's almost like the worse I am, the more cheers you get, because they want you to get through it and they're not sure if you can. And so it makes me laugh that you can get away with that, because she was dying after all. You know, her organs were packing up and the voice wasn't the same at all. Neither is mine, which is probably why I'm employed.
We've made it sound very sad, but the show does have a number of very funny moments. She was kind of famous for her singers, wasn't she?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, seriously funny. You can see them on the interviews and on YouTube. She was zap away, and everybody said, I mean, without a name drop, and I've said it before, Bernard Delfont, who employed her to do the talk of the town at this time, had a nephew called Michael. Now he's Lord Michael Grade, and he's huge in England, and he ran television studios, and he's a big guy. And so he came to see this, and he's now my friend, and he came on Broadway, and he's put money into it. Thank you, Michael, Lord Michael. And he said things that you will not find from anybody else, because he was there. So although, forgive me, he wasn't in the bedroom, he was talking to Mickey for 5 solid weeks, and he was talking to Judy for 5 solid weeks in the hotel room and at work. So I know from him that you know, he did give her all these Ritalins, because Lord Michael actually saw him do it. And she was a bit of a mess and game-playing and manipulating, back to the point of sitting at the end of the stage and crying when she did Over the Rainbow. I think, forgive me again if I'm misquoting and I'm paraphrasing, but even Liza Minnelli said she was shocked. Was it Liza or Lorna? Oh, I'm so sorry.
One of the daughters.
It was magical when she first saw the concert. And then the second time, it was like, oh, my God, she's doing exactly the same. That's what show business is. You can say it's manipulative, but that's what the gig is.
Is this an open run?
Yes.
Oh, so we have plenty of opportunity to see you in End of the Rainbow, Tracy Bennett, who is also joined by Michael Cumstey, Tom Pelfrey, and Jay Russell in this play that is written by Peter Quilter. Thank you so much for being with us
today. You're welcome. Thank you so much.
In a lullaby.